The central tenet today, phase one won't do, global trade pain will continue in the 20s. I sat on the stage on Friday in New York with a congressman from Nevada, and he said, this isn't a trade deal, it's a transactional agreement reached between two powerful men to help make their personal problems go away for a little while. So if you're relying on that deal as part of your long investment strategy this year, you better be careful. China's going to struggle, and I'll show you this, China's going to struggle to deliver on the purchasing commitments it's made, and that could come at just the wrong time. I'm also going to talk about how the Trump administration is probably going to declare trade war on Europe as well. It's one of the top six trade counterparties, and it's one of the only one so far that he hasn't done a deal with. So you need to watch out for that as well. But whilst there's monsters in the jungle, there's also opportunities. We're going to see uncertainties around trade policy, whether it's Brexit or whether it's in Asia with the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, but those will bring opportunities too. I'm also going to talk about a couple of trade areas that I'm excited about as well. I'm also going to talk about how supply chains are in a period of multi-year change. Yes, there's volatility there, but also opportunity. And I'm going to show you why diversified supply chains matter. You might be surprised to find out, as I'll show you, that actually supply chains have become less diversified, less complex in the past few years. That could be a good thing if you're looking at costs. It could be a bad thing if you're looking at risks, and we'll talk about that. To start with, I'm going to talk a little bit about why you should care about supply chain data. This chart is showing us, for 37 countries plus the European Union, the development of trade in the form of exports over the past year and a half. A green block is growth of over 3%, a red block is a contraction of 3%, gray is somewhere in the middle. You can see here, if we go back to 2018, lots of green, everything's great. But as we move through the past year or so, we've seen effectively a sea of red, of dropping exports, of dropping activity. That's a pretty terrible way to end 2019, but it's an even worse way to start 2020. There's plenty of problems out there. Coronavirus has been mentioned already. I'll talk about that and how you can kind of track, assess, and allow for that. But we've already got a widespread downturn. So at the top level, companies and decision makers in investments like yourselves are facing a tough environment. In that chart I just showed you, there are only two countries that have done really well over the past 2 years. One of them's Vietnam, the acknowledged winner from the US-China trade war, and the other is Australia. So well done to all of you. That's really only been driven, though, by a handful of sectors. In this chart, what we're showing you is individual sectors' growth in exports over the past year and the previous 3 years. The size of the bubble is effectively the contribution to exports. The big one is iron ore. So a massive part of the development of the Australian export economy has been down to one commodity. And that's obviously a big risk going into the coming year, particularly given that the biggest buyer of iron ore is China, which, as we've heard already, has got its own problems. Agriculture has also done very well, as have certain parts of the healthcare and electronics industry. And what we can do with trade data is to come even further down and say, okay, if agriculture has been doing well, and we'll take beef as an example, we can look at who the beneficiaries have been. Now, this is showing you exports to the United States from Australia of beef. The biggest winner that we'll see in there has been Cargill. So, not all economies have been winning, many have been losing. Not all industries within a given sector have been winning, many have been losing. And even within that, only a handful of companies have been succeeding. So there's very few people who have been succeeding in this kind of jungle environment. We can drill even further down within an individual company. This is a supply chain graph. You can think about it as being effectively a social network for companies. The dots, or the nodes, as we call them in graph theory, are individual corporate entities. This is Hennes & Mauritz, the retail company. The blue dots are effectively Hennes & Mauritz. The orange dots are its suppliers. The purple dots are its suppliers' suppliers. There is another version that goes to tier 3, tier 4, and so on, but we'd all need goggles on and be looking at it in VR. So maybe in a few years' time we can be doing that, and I'm looking forward to that. But what this chart effectively shows you is just how complex it is to get clothes from raw cotton all the way to delivered to customers. Now, I won't talk through this chart in detail, but one of the challenges companies face right now is they might understand who their specific supplier is, but they might not understand who their wider supplier group may be. You may be very happy as an investor in a company that said, hey, we don't rely on China at all. We got nothing to worry about from coronavirus. Well, if your second-tier supplier is based in Wuhan province, China, it's only a matter of time before you need to shut your factory because of a shortage of parts. And we're seeing that across the board, across industries. Now, we identified in our research about 3 weeks ago that the automotive sector and electronics were going to be particularly affected. And we've seen that play out so far in companies, including Nissan, including Hyundai, and of course, you know, most famously, we're beginning to see it now with Apple, who, you know, as a company that's run by a supply chain expert, has managed to be so specifically focused in one area that they're potentially going to be hit quite hard by, you know, call it a black swan event, I certainly would, but one nonetheless that it's kind of difficult to plan for. And that's an example, and this graph's an example of why it's important to have diversified supply chains. Now, let's take a look at VUCA in the context of what we expect from global trade policy in 2020. There's a lot of uncertainties in trade policy. To come back to my point at the beginning, people are being too relaxed about US-China trade relations. The phase one trade deal brought out effectively a central point to the agreement, which was China is going to buy $200 billion worth of American products in 2020 and 2021. Well, the first point is that agreement was reached in December before it was apparent that China was effectively going to lose several weeks of production, of economic activity, is going to lose that production. So that already puts them behind the ball. If you don't look at this deal in detail, you'll also think, well, you know, they'll go buy some soybeans and they'll go buy some liquefied natural gas, which, you know, not great news for the Australian economy, by the way. And they'll go buy some crude oil and happy days, job is done. The Donald is happy, Xi Jinping can stay in power for another 10 years and let's all move along. It's not that simple. When you break out what's being committed to by the Chinese government, what you'll actually see is that most of it is manufactured goods. So this is everything from cars and jet planes to pharmaceuticals. And that's actually the biggest purchase area. And that's not just state-owned enterprises, that's private enterprise as well. So how are they going to be leveraged into delivering what's required? Financial services is the second biggest area. That's going to be fund management. That's going to be companies that issue credit ratings and provide financial services. We're already seeing MasterCard expand its business there, and that's all great. But the scale of the growth would be unprecedented in any service economy developed at any stage. You can't see how they're going to make these numbers. And if they don't make these numbers, you're faced with a mercurial president who may decide, hey, I'm not getting what I paid for, what I asked for. I'm going back to war. That's particularly going to be the pace as we go through an election year where you have a very serious possibility of him facing some strong candidates up against him, one of whom comes from a business background. And when asked, how do you feel about there being two billionaires running for president, Mike Bloomberg said, who's the other one? It's a serious point. Donald Trump is going to have to prove that he is still tough on China. You know, we've heard already that Senator Warren is tough on China. Mayor Buttigieg is tough on China. All of the Democrats are saying that. So I think there's a very good chance that we're going to see a resurgence of trade conflict. The big one I'd be worried about, actually, is trade conflict between the EU and the US. As I mentioned earlier, the European Union is the only one of the top six trade partners that the US have where a deal has not been signed. And the European Commission has been very clear that it's not interested in doing a transactional deal, a one-off purchase. There was a chance for that back when Jean-Claude Juncker and President Trump met back in 2018. That boat has sailed. And it's not going to be triggered by what you expect. It's actually going to be triggered by the environment, because the European Commission has outlined its ambitious Green Deal. And this Green Deal is going to include carbon border taxes. It's a great policy. It's effectively exporting the EU's environmental plans to the rest of the world, but it's protectionism. It's a tariff. and the US will treat it as such, and the US will respond with tariffs. And this is exactly the playbook that was followed in China, with China, as a consequence of which, I think the transatlantic trade war is going to be a big issue for the coming period. And that's going to hit all kinds of industries. The chart here is showing you the development of automotive exports to the United States by a number of car companies. As you can see on the far right-hand side of that chart, it's already been looking pretty bad. President Trump has threatened tariffs repeatedly against the automotive industry. So if you want something to worry about for this year, I think this is probably the one to worry about. There's also a lot of uncertainty in trade policy elsewhere in the world. On the negative side, Brexit. I was going to talk about Brexit today, but as a Brit, it makes me sad, so I don't like to talk about it. But needless to say, there are a lot of trade deals to be done by the United Kingdom. We've also got trade conflict between South Korea and Japan, an argument goes all the way back to the Second World War and will not be cured easily. But the removal of trusted trader status shows us once again that we move to a period where countries are willing to link foreign policy and trade policy together, generating yet another level of uncertainty. But there's good news. Two trade deals I think you should be looking at this year that could generate significant opportunities for growth, significant opportunities for investment. One is the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, RCEP. The RCEP is closer than ever to actually reaching fruition this year. It's going to bring together China, Japan, South Korea. Australia's involved in that as well, of course. And that's really an opportunity, just as a goods free trade area, to provide a good impetus for economic development over the next couple of years. India's not part of that deal. India has decided to go its own way, to use a tariff-led policy. The other one I'm very excited about is the African Continental Free Trade Area. That's only just got started in the past year or so, but I think it's incumbent on governments, whether it's Europe, the US, who, frankly put, have been making progress with a potential trade deal with Kenya. So Europe, US, China's already been active there, and even mid-sized economies like the US, Australia and the UK, to engage with that African free trade area and really unlock the growth that trade can bring to those economies. Another big trend to watch for, and I wanted to make sure I got the environment in the middle of my presentation rather at the end of the presentation where it seems to end up for a lot of people, is the greening of trade deals. Trade deals are increasingly including an environmental construct. The European Union have been specific. They will only sign trade deals if the counterpart is signed onto the Paris Climate Agreement. So that's the US out straight away. It wants countries that have got active carbon pricing policies. So as Australia goes through the process of negotiating a trade deal with Europe over the next 2 years, that's going to have to go into the mix as well. The chart you see here, which is based on data from our colleagues at Trucost, is showing you the carbon intensity of revenue of the shipping sector. That's begun to turn down, but we're seeing now that the EU's Green Deal is going to bring shipping into the carbon trading scheme. That's going to increase costs, clearly, for shipping. It's going to increase costs for trade, but it should do. It is too cheap to ship products around the world at the moment. You can ship a 20-foot container, so bigger than the stage here, across the Pacific and deliver it across land into New York City from China for around $1,700. And that box might have $2.5 million worth of products in it if it's electronics. That's too cheap. That's an externality that needs to be cured. And so the greening of trade is going to introduce uncertainties, but it'll also bring investment opportunities as well. How are companies reacting to this? We've seen already volatility in supply chain structures. This chart is showing you, just for a selection of companies, their US imports from China and how they've changed over time. So the orange bar is where we are now. The very light blue bar is where we were 5 years ago. Most companies have been cutting back in some way, shape, or form. The trade war has accelerated that. I think coronavirus may well accelerate that as well, as companies with condensed supply chains, the highest bars there are Foster Electric and Costco, are both going to say, all right, actually, is it smart to be this focused on one country? Yes, we're saving ourselves some costs, but there are whole industries that have really become too focused on one area or one set of suppliers. there has been a decline in complexity. This chart is showing you, for just one small slice of the trade world, US seaborne imports, the number of involved participants. That's the solid line for the automotive sector and for the economy at large on a rebased basis. That's actually come down over the past year or so. So we've actually seen supply chains become somewhat less complex. That's partly due to consolidation. We've also seen the number of buyers, the number of suppliers per buyer come down as well. That's a sign that we've seen a reduction in complexity. The reduction in complexity is not necessarily a good thing. It can reduce your overall costs, but it increases your risks. And if you're trying to work in a riskier environment, this is not necessarily a great thing. Handling ambiguity as an investor or as a corporate decision maker is incredibly difficult. It's the known unknowns, and quite often the unknown unknowns as well. I think the things we're worried about for this year are, frankly put, things where there is not an opportunity on the other side of the equation. Our black swan risks for this year, principally around conflict risk. I think we're only ever a tweet away, an inflammatory protest away from the Middle East region kicking off again, and shipping goes to a single pinch point through the Straits of Hormuz. That can be closed by an Iranian soldier with a shoulder-mounted rocket launcher. And that's a big chunk of the gas trade out of Qatar, and it's a huge chunk of the oil trade that can be switched off like that. And it's not, doesn't even take actually physical interdiction. Insurance companies can say, no, we are not going to support shipping through there. Same goes for the Straits of Malacca. Same goes for the straits that take you into past Yemen and Eritrea, that take you into the Suez Canal. Those are pinch points that could be very easily pinched this year. The other area I'd be worried about is trade between India and Pakistan. There's an incredible opportunity there for peace between those countries, but there is no sign that either under either administration that we're going to get that. This chart is showing you trade exports by India with the rest of the world. Pakistan is the blue bit. Now, I'm stood quite close to that image here. I can't see it. Countries that trade together don't go to war together. These countries don't trade together, so guess what? So I think these are issues that you maybe want to be worried about. There's a lot more to read up on this. We provide over 5,000 reports on our website that go through these risks on an individual basis. You're very welcome to take a look through those. But I think to bring it back to my points at the beginning, the phase one trade deal isn't a trade deal. It's just an agreement between two guys. I think there's a good risk that it fails. Be worried about US-China. I think the US and the EU are going to get in a trade war, and it's going to be triggered by environmental policy and by carbon border taxes. But there are trade deals emerging elsewhere. That's maybe where you want to focus your attention. Asia and Africa. And in the meantime, companies need to manage their supply chain diversity. Diversity's been tipping down. It needs to expand once again.